Well, today we have an incredible special guest with us, and he's going to be speaking for us today and to us, and his name is Chris Sonksen, and Chris is a pastor in California. He is a pastor of a church that actually has 9 different campuses in 3 different states. Chris is also an author. He's written 3 books. He travels around the world speaking all over the place, and I met Chris in my trip to Haiti a couple months ago. And the amazing thing about it was that this is something he didn't even know, that over the last few months I've been praying and asking God to help bring in someone to help invest in us, to help us. We're a young church. We need help with leadership and understanding systems and learning how to grow as a church. And I kept praying and just saying, God, I don't know where this person's going to come. And 2 weeks after I left Haiti, Chris called me and said that he really believed in the vision of our church and felt like God was calling him to invest something back in us. And so Chris is here today to speak, and then after this, he's going to invest in our staff over lunch. And so I'm really excited. He did an incredible job the last hour. I'm really excited for you guys to hear from Chris Sonksen. Would you help me thank him for being here today?
All right. Well, good morning. Oh, that was good. You're much better than the 9:30 service. Say, and they're not even attractive. No, I'm just joking. Everybody doing good? Awesome, man. Let's have some fun. I think church should be a place where we have some fun. I told the first service that this is an amazing church. You have an amazing pastor, by the way. You really do. I am a little bitter. I live in California where it's like $1 million for a square foot of land. And here in Virginia, we just give churches away. So if anybody's got an extra car or a boat, just feel free to let me know and, you know, you'll go to heaven. And I told the first service you have a celebrity staff. You got Rob. He kind of looks like Lex Luthor. And you got the worship leader, Duck Dynasty. Everybody is coming together here at this amazing church. Why don't you stand with me real quick? And I always love to do this because this really lets me know the kind of people we're dealing with here today. I saw this on Dr. Phil. How many of you have seen on Dr. Phil that it's just true? It's like Wikipedia. But here's what I want you to do. We're going to have some fun here this morning. I think church, how many believe church should be fun? I like church should be boring. You know, come serve our God. It's really fun. Hallelujah. Praise God. We want to be fun. So we're going to have a good time today. So let's have a blast. And I'm really, really tired. Like, as in, I had to get up at 3 my time this morning. So don't be sitting out there going, this is getting long. Just keep laughing, even if I'm not funny. Just make fun of my big teeth. Whatever you want to make fun of, I really don't care. All right, here we go. Spread your hands out really wide like this. And on the count of 3, you're going to have to kind of angle yourself because here's what you're going to do. I'm going to ask you to clap on the count of 3. Okay, not yet. Count of 3. All right, ready? 1, 2, and 3. All right, good job. Okay, now, this time, I want you to clap your hands. They land, however they land, you know, with your thumbs and your fingers, however they land, boom, stop, and hold it. Don't go back like this, hold it. And that's our scientific test. You gotta hold it after you clap. Ready? Spread out real quick. Here we go. 1, 2, and... At least in California we can count. No, I'm sorry, I'm totally playing. Ready? 1, 2, and 3. Alright, now here we go, here we go. Look down at your hand. If your left thumb is over the right thumb. Left thumb over the right thumb. Lift it up in the air like that. Left thumb over the right thumb. You people are great thinkers. You're the smartest people in the room. Yeah. Now, if your hands aren't up, it's just, you're not smart. I'm sorry. It's just not that way. Now, you got great thinkers. If your right thumb is over the left thumb, right thumb over the left thumb, lift it up high in the air. Okay? High in the air. You people are great looking. It's just natural for you. If your hands aren't up right now, you're smart, but you just don't got anything going on here. So we got great thinkers. We got great looking. Okay, you're good looking. Now, how many have your thumbs together? Ooh, a lot of you. Lift it up. You people just think you're good looking. That's who you are. It's an ego problem for you. So go ahead and have a seat. All right, now we kind of divided up the audience. We know who we're dealing with. So, I've been married for 23 years. I know, I look 20. I've been married for 23 years to this beautiful Hispanic woman. She is just a gorgeous, gorgeous Hispanic woman. I call her my little hot tamale. And Well, that's better than my enchilada. You know, I guess that would be good. And then I have two wonderful children. I have a son, plays baseball. He is into fitness. He works out. He is all Mr. Cut. Matter of fact, I mean, he is like, he's a good-looking kid. It doesn't come from me. He got like approached by Hollister and all these people. He's just like a good-looking kid, all cut and trim and works out and he exercises. He runs every day. He plays sports. He does all of that. And then I got a daughter. She texts. That's it. Anybody got a daughter like that? Yeah. Well, they're going to give out scholarships soon. Just keep praying. So we're believing God for that. But no, it's really awesome to be able to be with you guys today. And my goal is not only to have some fun with you guys and inspire you a little bit through the help of the Holy Spirit and God, and but also to spend time with this amazing man and his incredible team and be able to help add value. And flew out here on my dime because I believe in what you guys are doing here. And I do. I really do. And I'm just a big fan of making other people succeed. It is just my heart. That's what I love to do. So, and we went to the Crab Shack last night. I'm rambling because we don't have a next service, so I'm just going to keep going. Just sit down and relax. I got something to say. No. Went to the Crab. How many have been at a Crab Shack? Oh, that was amazing. Oh, that place rocked. And what are those things called? We don't have them there in California. Hush Puppy. There you go. Yeah, I thought it was a shoe they were going to bring, but it was actually food. Anyway, so, hey, my wife has always told me that I'm a type of guy that has a bucket list. You know what a bucket list is? Things you want to do before you die. And several of the things that I've done so far, and they're on my bucket list. They really are. I kind of have a mental bucket list. You know, to go down the Nile River, to stand on the equator, to stand on a pyramid, to travel all the different continents, you know, whatever. And I've done most of those things. And one of the things that I had on my bucket list came up several years ago, and that was to skydive. I'd never done that before. How many of you have ever skydived before in the house? Okay, just Rob and one guy with a broken arm in the back. That's it. Skydive. Now, here's the deal with skydiving. I didn't want a tandem jump. Tandem is when you get hooked to somebody and you kind of go along for the ride. I wanted to do the full-on, you know, the whole deal. I wanted to get the lesson, the whole thing. And so this was years ago. So we were doing a thing at our church called Living the Great Adventure. And every staff member had to do something different. And then it was showed up on the screen that week. It was like a 5-week series. So our key staff members, 1 week, one of our guys had to learn bull riding, the worship pastor. You know, and so he learned how to bull ride, and then we videoed it and turned it into a 2-minute thing. It was hilarious. He got crushed. And then one guy, one of our staff members had to learn the barefoot water ski. Disaster. He hung on to it. It was so funny. And we watched that 1 week. And then one was our children's director got all, you know, styrofoamed up or whatever it was, and went to a sheriff's academy and became the person that the dogs attacked. It was bad. And we were looking to make a move with her anyway, but that just kind of worked out. She's not with us anymore. And so, and then my job was to skydive. Now, I went out there, so I took a video guy with me, and everybody knew that I was going to skydive. And the whole church was excited to see how it went down. So Tuesday, Wednesday, I don't know what day it was, Thursday in the afternoon, went to skydive. And it was about 40 minutes away from my house. And you get there, and you got to sign all this paperwork and all this legal stuff. And then you go into this room, and it's about this big, and you're sitting with there, you know, and there's the instructor. And there's only a handful of us in there ready to die. And so he's standing there, and he's all, hey, man. He says, he's up there doing a little class. It's like a 6-hour class because we don't want a tandem jump. We want to do the whole thing. And so I'm standing there, you know, inside the class. And I raise my hand, and I say, hey, Mr. Instructor, sir. I said, I notice you guys don't guarantee anything. He said, no. He goes, we don't guarantee anything. I said, you know, you don't guarantee the flight instructions we're getting here? The instructions for parachute? Nope. And you don't guarantee the plane? Nope. You don't guarantee the parachute we're going to jump out with? He said, no. I said, you don't guarantee the landing? He goes, oh, no. We guarantee you'll land. One way or another, dude, you will hit the ground. And so, I'm like, that's encouraging. So, then, one other thing was, I thought it was hilarious. He gave us this thing, it had like 20 little boxes. It was just a little Xerox copy. 20 boxes of hand signals. So we would jump out and there would be a jump master about 20 feet away from you and he would give you hand signals. Your legs are too far apart, your arms are too far apart, you're shaking, you know, whatever, so you wouldn't spin out of control because you can spin out of control. So I thought, okay, you know, and so I'm looking at these things and he's telling us how important they are and I lift my hand and I said, hey, I go, there's 20 signs on one piece of paper. I said, are these important? He goes, oh yeah. He goes, it's a matter of life and death if you're going on your own. You know, you got to know these signs. And I said, how are we going to memorize all 20 signs when we're heading towards a ground I know we're not going to miss? You know what he told me? He goes, oh, don't worry, you can take the paper with you. I'm like, I got it! You know, what are you supposed to do? So that night, we were going to go see, my wife and I, we were going to go see The Wizard of Oz at a community theater. And my daughter was much smaller at the time, and she was all fired up, you know. We were going to go out to pizza at 5 o'clock or something like that. Then we were going to see the show at 7 o'clock. She dressed up as Dorothy. She had a basket. And, oh, it was a big, big ordeal, right? So I called my wife about 3:30. I said, hey, you come down. Bring your clothes with me. We're running a little bit late. I'll do the jump, you know. You guys can watch me jump. And then we'll go out to pizza, and then we'll go see Wizard of Oz. My kids were all excited to go see Wizard of Oz. My wife was excited. She had the insurance policy hanging out of her pocket. She's very, very excited. It's like, if he dies, I'm rich. And so they get there, and they keep delaying us because there's wind problems or whatever. And I'm standing there with my sons right here. My daughter's right here, and my wife's right here. And I'm talking to my son. He's only like 8 years old at the time. And he looks at me, and he's a very compassionate kid, extremely compassionate. Should have been born in the 60s. He's like a love child. And he looks at me, he goes, Dad, I don't want you to die. I don't want you to go, Daddy. What if something happens to you? You know, and I'm trying to console him as a dad, you know, and I'm like, don't worry, son, God will take care of it. In my mind, I'm thinking, will he? Or is he up there going, you're the dummy? You know, what's going to happen here? So now over here is my wife and my daughter. Now my daughter says to my wife, now she doesn't know that I hear her. My daughter doesn't know that I hear her, but I overhear my daughter, God honest truth, I overhear my daughter say to my wife, now if Daddy dies, we're still going to go see the wizard, right? It's not going to interfere. This whole death thing is not going to get in the way. So ultimately, I jumped. It was an amazing trip. It really was. I jumped. I had these two jump masters for me. My guys assigned to me were named Yo-Yo and Ed, which, you know, that's like the Yo-Yo was like high half the time, and I'm like, this is a nightmare, I'm gonna die. Anyway, so, I jumped, and I finally got up 12,000 feet in the air, and boom, I jumped, and I flew through the air. It was amazing. Now, here's the deal. All my life, I've flown on planes, and I fly them on them all the time. And you look outside some 8-inch window, if you sit on the window seat, and you look, and you think, wow, man, we're really up here. You can see a lot from an 8-inch view. However, on that day, for the first time, and the only time, because I will never do that again. I only did it for God and for the church. Outside of that, for the first time, I'm 12,000 feet in the air, and I'm seeing the view from something completely different. Not from an 8-inch view, from this view. Here's what I want to do today for the next few minutes. I want to take your life and your view of your life, and I want to take it from 8 inches, how you view it, to wide open, how God views it. Because God has a different perspective of our life. See, here's what I believe with all my heart. Okay, this is what I believe. I believe in a God that absolutely wants what's best for our life. Now, you might kind of be new to church, and I get that, and that's cool. But I believe in a God that absolutely wants what's best for our life and desires for our life to live up to its potential. Now, here's the deal. He created you to dream. He created you for big things. You were born that way. Think about it when you're little. What do you say to a kid when they're little? You look at them and say, what do you want to be when you grow up? What are you really telling them? What are you dreaming about, son? What are you dreaming about, little girl? What is in your heart? What is in your mind? What happens to us, though? We get into the system of school. Then 12-year-old, then 18-year-old, and somewhere along the lines, we used to paint the sky green and the trees blue, and then the teacher says, that's wrong, and then we start going inside of the lines. Not that the teacher's wrong, it's just that all of a sudden, we start getting into the normal life, then we go to college, and all of a sudden, we get our job, and our dreams turn into routines. We're born with a shout, but we end up with a whisper. So much different than the way God really created us. Because there is a God in heaven who radically believes in us. Now, I believe in all my heart that inside of this room, there are books that have not yet been written. Inside of this room, there are songs that have not yet been played. Inside of this room, there are ministry ideas that could transform the world and transform Virginia. There are concepts of business that could finance your family and the next generation and this church at a whole nother level. There are ideas. Now, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to take those ideas to the grave, or you're going to live out those ideas and stand before God and say, Lord, I die empty. In other words, I've done everything that you put inside of me to do. because there is a God in heaven who insanely loves you, is insanely passionate about you, who sent his son for you, and he is a dreamer and he desires great things for you. Okay? The earth needs what you have. And you're not, and I always tell people, if you're not dead, that just means he's not done with you yet. He's got something for your life. Now, my favorite character in the Bible is a dude named Peter. Now, Peter, the reason I like Peter is because he's always messing up and God still likes him. Seriously, I feel like Peter the entire time. I'm a total mess up and God still likes me. Now, 2,000 years ago, let me give you a little history, ready? 2,000 years ago, if you were a Jewish male, your whole goal was to be a rabbi. What was your goal? To be a what? Okay, you wanted to be a rabbi. Now, what did rabbi school look like? Well, let me help you. It wasn't like our normal school. Rabbi school looked like this 2,000 years ago. From age 5 to age 10, you would go to a school called Bet Sefer. Translated meant the house of books. And you would have to memorize, from age 5 to age 10, you had to memorize the first 5 books of the Bible, verse by verse. How many would have failed Bet Sefer? You'd be like, does John 3:16, does that work? Can I pass? Then from age 10 to 15, you would enter into Bet Talmud. Bet Talmud translated means the house of learning. Now the house of learning, you would have to memorize the entire Old Testament verse by verse. If you pass that, you go to the third and final phase at age 15. You go to Bet Midrash, which translated means the house of study. And at the house of study, here's how it goes down. You have to go to a rabbi, because what's the ultimate goal when you're a Jewish male? To be a what? Rabbi. Okay, you go to the rabbi at age 15. You've passed all the courses. And you say, Rabbi, can I follow you? Now, if the rabbi says, come and follow me, you're in. He's going to apprentice you, and you're going to become a rabbi. And all your dreams are going to come true. However, if he says to you, no, you cannot follow me, then you got to go back to your family's trade, farming or whatever it was. Now, let's fast forward to the picture of Peter. For those of you that may be around church for a while, you might know this answer. What was Peter doing when Jesus first met him? What was he doing?
Fishing.
Fishing. Why was he fishing? You know why he was fishing? Because he failed. Everything Peter ever dreamed about, everything he ever wanted to do in life was shattered. Because we know that because he was fishing. Because he went to a rabbi and he said, Rabbi, can I follow you? And the rabbi said no. Can you see it in your mind's eye? Think about what that would look like. Peter goes back home, sits at the breakfast table, looks at his mom and dad and says, Mom, Dad, the rabbi doesn't want me. He says, I'm not good enough. He goes out that day and he grabs his net, throws it over his shoulder, rows out in the boat, and he feels like he is sentenced to a life of fishing. To a life less than he was meant to live. And all his dreams were shattered. Until one day, Jesus, the ultimate rabbi, turns the tables on Peter. And instead of Peter having to say, Rabbi, will you follow me? The ultimate rabbi says, come follow me. It changes everything. You know what he was doing on that day to Peter? It wasn't just come follow me and hang out and be my disciple. It was, Peter, I see you. And I see everything you could become. I see everything that's inside of you. And I believe in you, and I believe in the dreams you have for your life. And he does the same thing today. If you are 15 years old in here today, or you are 75 years old in here today, he is not done with you. Isn't it funny in life? People always say, well, I'm just too young to do that great thing. And then when they get older, well, I'm just too old to do that great thing. Well, when's the right time then? The right time is now. It doesn't matter if you're 15 or 17. Mother Teresa didn't even move to Calcutta until she was 40. Okay? And she became a household name. God's not done with you. He's got dreams for your life. I don't care, again, if you're 15 or you're 75 years old, he's not done. He did the same thing with Peter. Come follow me, Peter. Look what I want to make out of your life. And then Peter was like, okay, I'll follow you. And he began to follow him. However, the doubt sunk in. Peter started following him. But he started thinking, man, does he understand who I am? I failed the rabbi school. In Matthew chapter 14, it's going to come up on the screen. Let's put it up there. Matthew 14, let's take a look at it. And I'll read it to you. Peter's now following the ultimate rabbi, but he's still dealing with that insecurity inside of his heart. I'm not that good. I'm not that good looking. I'm not that talented. I'm not that gifted. I'm not like so and so. Does that sound familiar to any of you and things that you've thought before? I'm not as good. I'm not as talented. I'm not as gifted. Maybe I'll never have something as big or as wonderful as that person does. Peter felt that before. Look what happened in Matthew 14 after Jesus said, come follow me. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from the land, and a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About what time in the morning? 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them. That always cracked me up. Like, what is Jesus doing walking around on water at 3 a.m? This is funny to me. I'm like, don't you sleep? Walking on water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified in their fear. They said, it's a ghost. But Jesus spoke to them, don't be afraid. Take courage, I'm here. Then Peter called them, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come walk on the water. Yes, come, Jesus said. So Peter got out of the boat, okay, and walked on the water. First human being to ever do this. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and he began to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him and said, you have so little faith. Now, think about this for a moment. Jesus is walking on the water. Peter's there still dealing with insecurity. And all of a sudden, Jesus says, Peter, come out on the water. He goes, okay, Lord. And he starts walking on the water. And then he starts to sink. And he says, save me, Lord. And he pulls him out, pulls him into the boat. Peter's all wet and sopping wet. And he looks at Peter and says, you have so little faith. Now, think about that for a moment. What was Jesus saying to Peter? You have so little what? What did he mean by that? Was he looking at him going, you have so little faith in me? How could Peter have lost faith in Jesus? How can you lose faith in someone that's standing on water? It's a little hard to do. Go out, walk around on James River today and see what people think. It's a little hard to lose faith in someone. I don't think that Peter lost his view of Jesus. Hold on. I think Peter lost his view of how Jesus viewed him. It's like, I'm just Peter. I can't be walking on water. I can't be doing this amazing thing. I'm nobody. And yet, Jesus comes and says, I see your insecurity. I see your problem. And I have something bigger for you, Peter. I told you to come follow me when everybody else rejected you. And now you're still sinking because you still not only doubt me, but you doubt who you are in me. See, you got to understand, it's not who you are, it's who you belong to that makes you so special. It's the dream inside that says, this is what God puts inside of us. He caused us to dream. Hey, did you know when there was two disciples in the Bible and they argued about who the greatest would be in the kingdom? And I love it. Jesus comes up and says, what are you talking about? I love when Jesus asks a question he knows the answer to. And they're so dumb. They're like, Lord, did you hear us? Well, of course he heard you. He's God. And they said, well, we were arguing who's the greatest. And we want to know, Jesus, who's the greatest? Is it going to be me? Or is it going to be this disciple over here? Now, if I was Jesus, I'd have been like, who are you guys to even talk about being the greatest? Ka-ta! You know, I mean, that's what I would have did. However, what does Jesus do? He tells them how to be great. Look it up. He actually tells them how to be great. Why does Jesus tell them how to be great? Because he wasn't going to discourage the very thing he created. He created us for so much more. He said, greater works will you do than I ever done on this earth. Anybody outdo Jesus so far? Sounds crazy to think, but he said we could. That we could do greater works than he ever did on this earth. Besides the cross, we could do it. But your marriage, your finances, your career, your dreams, your ideas, your goals, your books that haven't been written. How many people came up to me after the first service? I have an idea of a book. I have an idea of a book. When are you going to do it? When the dreams turn into routines, that's a problem. And there was a problem inside of Peter. He couldn't believe it. So Jesus, over time, began to tweak Peter's thought process in three major areas. Number one, let's put it up on the screen for me. It's the word attitude. Say it with me out loud. What is it?
Attitude.
Attitude. Now, how many have ever met anybody with a really great attitude? Raise your hand. You've met someone, just like, wow, they were positive. How many met anybody with a really bad attitude? Okay, don't go like this. Really bad attitude. Haven't you ever met anybody that brings more joy when they exit the room than when they enter? You know what I'm talking about? You're like, oh, really? You got to leave? God, that's too bad. Attitude. It just makes a huge difference in our life. Matthew 7, verse 7 actually deals with attitude. You know that? Jesus said, ask and it will be given unto you. Seek and you will find. Did you know that seek and you will find deals with attitude? It really does. Because whatever you seek, Jesus said, you'll find. He was trying to teach Peter a point. hey, Peter, if you just keep on having this attitude that you're nothing, then that's what you'll end up being. You don't get what you want, Peter. You get what you believe. It was attitude. Matthew 7:7, whatever you seek, you find. Think about that for a moment. If you seek the best in your marriage, you'll find it. If you seek the worst in your marriage, you'll find it too. Because whatever you seek, you find. If you seek the best in your job, you'll find it. If you seek the worst in your job, you'll find it too. Whatever you seek, you find. Hey, if you seek the best about this church, you'll find it. If you seek the worst about this church, you'll find it. Because whatever you seek, you find. It all really matters what you're looking for. It's like the difference between the hummingbird and the vulture. The hummingbird looks for what is alive, but the vulture looks for what is dead. The hummingbird looks for what is fresh. The vulture looks for what is stale. The hummingbird looks for what is new, and the vulture looks for what is old. And both find exactly what they're looking for. Because whatever you seek, you're going to find it. It's all about attitude. It's about measuring up and having that attitude that says, this is who I am in God. This is who He made me to be. These are my dreams, and I'm going to go after it because not because of who I am, but because of who I belong to and who I am in Him. It's about that attitude that says, this is what I'm going to do. It's seeking the right thing. Second thing is the word belief. Put it up on the screen for me. Say it out loud with me. What's the word?
Believe.
Believe. Now, here's the deal. Jesus said in Matthew 9:29, He said this. Another thing He taught Peter. He said, according to your faith, it will be done for you. Now think about that for a moment. Follow me. Jesus said, according to your faith, He will do that. So this is what that means. He says, now, if all you want to believe about your life and all I have for you is way down here, fine. That's fine. But if you want to believe this much for your life, then fine. I'll meet you wherever you want me to meet you. That's up to you. According to your faith, I will do that for you. Okay? It's a matter of Jesus coming and saying, Rob and Susie and Monica and whatever your name is, whoever you are. This is what He says to you. He comes along and He says, I believe in you. Now I want you to see yourself not as you've always seen yourself, but to see yourself as the way that I see you. That I have dreams for your life, and I want you to live that out. And you got to start believing that about your life. Believe that I am a child of God. You know, I teach that to my kids all the time. I always tell them, you're a child of God. You are a child of God. Man, walk like a child of God. Talk like a child of God. Act like a child of God. You are a child of the King. And I tell my kids, when my kids, you ask my kids, if they were here today, they'd say, your dad, when it's Christmas time, and you go to the mall, and there's 800 million people at the mall, where does he go the day before Christmas? They'll tell you, my dad always drives right to the front of the parking lot. Because I always tell my kids, God's got a spot in the front for us, man, because we're a child of God. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. And we end up parking like 6 miles away. And my kids are like, we're walking. And my kids are like, Dad, I thought you said God had a plan for us. You know, and we're a child of God. Maybe He thinks we need to lose weight. Just walk. You know. But I tell them, we're a child of God, man. Let me tell you something. Men in the house. You're a child of the Alpha and the Omega. You are a son of the living God. Women in the house, you are a daughter of the Prince of Peace. That's who you are. Act like it. Walk like it. Talk like it. Think like it. Don't think less than. Who wins when we think less than? God or the enemy? God never wins. You thinking small doesn't do anybody any good, and it sure in the heck doesn't do God any good. Doesn't do it. God designed us for so much more, and He wants so much more out of our life. But here's what gets in our way. A lot of things, but I'll just list a few. Number one is fear. Fear gets in our way. Man, I can't start that ministry. I can't step out. I can't do this certain thing over here. Fear's getting in my way. Here's the problem with fear. Fear must submit to belief. People come to me all the time. I travel, I speak, or we have campuses and all that. People say, I have a fear problem, Pastor Chris. No, you don't. You got a belief problem. The problem isn't fear. I'm sorry. It's not. The problem is belief. You don't believe in either God or yourself or who you are in God. That's your problem. problem is that you don't believe that he has a bigger plan for your life. You don't believe that God's going to take care of it. You don't believe that you could step out and see the world at a big old 12,000 foot view rather than an 8-inch window outside of a plane. You don't believe that. So the fear gets inside of your heart, but fear must submit to belief. The other thing that gets in our way with belief is doubt. What if I can't do it? What if I can't measure up? What if it doesn't work? I can only imagine Pastor Rob and his wife 2 years ago thinking, we're going to start a church. Is this going to work? Is anybody going to show up? And then all of a sudden they just start working it and working it, and here it goes. And this is just the beginning of what God's going to do and the impact this next level church is going to have. You can't let doubt get in your way. Let me give you a little phrase you might want to write down. Feed your dreams and starve your doubts. Don't let it get in. Don't let it get those doubts get in the way. The last thing I want to tell you, two more things real quick, is insecurity gets in our way. I can't measure up. I'm not that good. I'm not that attractive. I'm not that smart. It won't work for me. It'll never happen for me. And then outside voices get in our way of belief. People do that all the time, don't they? I remember when we were starting the church, Pastor Rob, I'll never forget it. We were going to start the church, you know, years ago, and we were going to start it just like you did. And I remember I was at some worship conference, something. I don't remember what was that. I was at a something, and I had a friend of mine, and I'm telling him, man, we're going to start a church. We're like in worship like this, but I'm whispering over to my friend, we're going to start this church, man, and God's just going to do some great things. I'm so excited. It's a guy I hadn't seen in a while. He leans over to me and goes, man, it'll never work, dude. I'm like, we're hearing him. He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know how you're going to do it, dude. He goes, I'd be scared if I were you. He goes, you're going to lose it all. You're going to lose everything. I'm like, oh, this is really encouraging, you know. We are singing out, how amazing is our God. Yeah, it'll never work. But and it's amazing how we get those outside voices that say things to us. Is that right? Okay, let me tell you something. People will always criticize your dream down to a level that's comfortable for themselves. They will. They will criticize your dreams down to a level that's comfortable for themselves. You know why they'll do that? Because your desire for excellence threatens their mediocrity. It's all you're doing is threatening their mediocrity. The more I go after writing books, the more I do things, the more people, well, that's not going to work, that's not going to happen, cut, 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 cut. Google my name. You got all sorts of people saying cruddy stuff. You know, it's never going to end. You know, Pastor Rob gave me his book. I'm already halfway through it. I hope you've read it. You need to buy it. And it talks about, and just give the money to me. Don't give it to him, though. He gets buildings for free. For God's sakes, give me something. No, I'm sorry. But it's those things that people always want to criticize you down to that. Attitude. Belief. Last one is courage. Say it with me out loud. What's the word?
Courage.
Courage. And that is the courage to stand out and to walk out of this room in just a few minutes and be better than you walked in. To walk out of that room and say, today, I am drawing a line in the sand and I am going to rob the grave. The graveyard has millions of dreams and millions of books and millions of ideas that never got lived out, doesn't it? You decide today, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to have the courage to walk out of this room and I'm going to start putting my dreams into action, not because it's all about me, but because it's all about Him and He made me for greatness. It's who I am and it's who you are in God. Look at it. It's through Scripture over and over. He finally began to start changing Peter's life and his perspective, and he wants to do the same for you. Okay? Here's the deal. Comfort is a breeding ground for mediocrity. So you can't walk out of here just saying that you're going to be comfortable the entire time. It's a breeding ground for mediocrity. I'm not going to be comfortable anymore. I'm going to get out of my comfort zone, which probably wasn't very comfortable to begin with, and I'm going to live out my life to a level that He wants me to live because I have the courage to do so. Last story I just want to share with you, and we'll wrap it up in prayer here in just a minute, but I love baseball. How many baseball fans do we have here? Who's the team to like in this area?
Dodgers.
It's kind of over in LA area. I have taken my son. We started age 8 and we went till age 18, to 3 stadiums every summer. So my son and I have seen every single baseball stadium in America and then the one in Canada. We've seen them all. I know some of you are like, wow, that's really neat. Well, you didn't have to pay for it, so it wasn't that great. It was an expensive little trip, believe me. But we've seen them all. And he's a left-handed pitcher for a university. And so, and I always tell people I got 2 forms of retirement. 401k, my son's left arm. Everybody has their way of making money. But when my son was about 3 years old, My son was maybe just 3 or 4 years old. They asked me at the church I was at. I was an associate pastor. They said, hey, some guy comes up and says, hey, man, you want to be I know you love baseball. You want to be a coach? Well, I travel a lot, blah, blah. Well, just help me out when you can. So I helped out him. Long story, you know, and we ended up having a great season. We're called the White Sox. And, so I was, the team was 9, 10, and 11 year olds. And I'll never forget it. We lined up the kids the first day. You know, we lined them up on the bench, like 15 of them. And the parents are all in the back, you know, sitting behind them. And they're all filling out paperwork. And we're meeting our little team in LA, Los Angeles, California. And I said, what's your name? Susie. Or Tommy. What's your name? Freddie. What's your name? You know, Curtis. What's your name? You know, Jose. What's your name? And we get this one kid. What's your name? Big old Samoan kid. You know, in stocky kid. I go, what's your name? And he goes, people call me the babe. I'm like, hey, you're so humble, you know. After 26 games, Babe batted 767. That is huge. Babe's problem wasn't swinging. He had a beautiful swing. He pounded the ball every time. I'd never seen anything like it. He really was amazing. He hated to run. That was his problem. So we had to set up incentives at all the different bases. Like a Fun Dip and a Snicker Bar and a Three Musketeer just to kind of motivate him to get to the next base. Because he'd just stop. Like, I'm done. You know, the ball's still in the outfield. Like, nah, I'm far enough. That's just the way he was. We had another kid on the team named Freddie. Now, Freddie had zero athletic ability, had zero sports ability, couldn't swing, couldn't hit, couldn't field, couldn't do any of it. But man, did that kid have a winning attitude. I'm serious. He'd be up to bat like a strike one. Strike two, you know, just smile, strike three, he'd run back. Hey, coach, I'm back. I'm like, okay, you know. He thought the goal was to get back to the dugout as fast as possible. Like, I did it in 30 seconds. I'm like, yeah, all right. He had no athletic ability. But he had a really mean, when I'd stand on first base and I would say, Freddy, take a swing, you can do it, take a swing. He'd strike out. Freddy, take a swing, you can do it, take a swing. He'd strike out again. Halfway through the season, he got a little foul ball, the crowd went crazy. His hands were like this. He never ever had made contact up to that point. You know, ever. And he's like, what do? I go, just stand there. It's a foul ball. What's a foul ball? He looks up in his little book. He's like a little genius. I'm like, never mind. And so his dad's up in the crowd. He had a big old dad, huge dude. And one day his dad yells out from the crowd. I'm over there, first base coach. Take a swing! His dad yells out, Freddy! From the grandstands. Don't swing! You can't hit it! You're no good. He says this to his little 9-year-old son. Oh my gosh, was I mad. And as a pastor and as a spiritual leader, I thought, what do I do? So I yelled out, don't listen to your dad. His dad turned around, took about 20 minutes, he was huge. And what'd you say? And it echoed towards me, and I was like, I'm gonna die. So I just kept telling, Freddy, take a swing. Strikes out every time. So we get to the final game, championship game. There's about 400 people watching this championship game. It was ridiculous. There was news vans there. Three or four news vans. Crazy. These people are crazy about baseball in this area. And so we go there and we play the championship game. We only play 6 innings. We've got the trophies there. It's a big old deal. We're in the championship game. We'd only lost one game all year long. We get down to the 6th inning, the bottom of the 6th. We are 3 outs away from losing it all because we're down 2-1. They got 2. We got 1. I could bring the team together. Come on, guys, we can do it, blah, blah, blah. White Sox, you know. I go over to first base. I'm standing on first base. Coach, first kid comes up. Come back. He nails the double. We got a guy on second. That's our tying run. I'm like, thank God we got the tying run on. You know, next kid comes up. Boom. Little pop-up right to the pitcher. I'm like, one out. Man on second. Next kid comes up. Crack. Line drive. Right over to first base. Boom. He catches it. Great catch. 2 outs. Man on second. We're 1 out away from losing it all. And who comes up to bat? You think he's nervous? Pfft, not a chance. He's like, there's a lot of people here, Coach. Is this an important game? You know, he's clueless to what's going on. So I stand over there. Come on, Freddy, take a swing. You can do it. Strike one. Come on, Freddy, take a swing. You can do it. Strike two. We are 1 strike away from losing it all. We only lost one game all year long. I was like, we are not going to. I wanted that dumb little plastic trophy so bad. It's 2 strikes, 0-2 is the count, man on second, Freddy's up there, he's smiling away, and I'm thinking, we are 1 strike away from losing it all, so it was time for me and God to have a talk. And I said, God, all year long, I have been telling this kid to take a swing. I know there is no chance that his bat will hit the ball. But could you, by accident, let the ball hit the bat? If not that, let the ball hit him. I don't care either way. Here comes the pitch. Friday, take a swing! Boom! Crack! He nails it to right field. He didn't know what to do. We never had to train him to run. We never thought we'd get that far. And so, all of a sudden, he takes off. The kid on second base, he had some wheels, so boom, he's home. We're tied up. Freddie starts rounding first, and I look out to right field, and it goes through the kid's legs. And I'm like, oh, go, 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 Freddie, go! He starts taking off to second. I illegally go from first over to third, across the field in the middle of the play. I run across the pitcher's mound. I look at Freddie's dad in the grandstand. And I get over the other side. And here comes Freddie. Now here comes Freddie. He's coming towards third. And the crowd's yelling, stop, hold him, hold him. They're making the relay. Not me, man. I want my heck no. I said, send him. So I sent him. You know, I'm stressed out. The crowd is yelling at me because they wanted me to hold him. And I send him. The only one not stressed out is who? He's rounding third. He don't give a rip, you know. And so, go, Freddie, go, go, go. And he's just running, a little head shaking all over the place. And I'm all yelling, Freddie, slide, slide. Never had to train him to do that, so it was more of a duck and roll. You know, he landed on the, he's laying like this, you know, the tag comes down, the dust goes up. It felt like it forever. And finally, the umpire yells out, safe! And we win the game on Freddie's one and only hit all year long. We take his little 42-pound body, and we just start marching it around. It was an amazing thing. Now, let me wrap it up by saying this. Here's the deal. There is a God in heaven who desires for some of you to step back in the batter's box of your dreams and of your goals and of what he created you to be. He wants you to step in that batter's box, even though there may be a little fear in your heart or doubt. Can you really hit it? Can you really do this? Are you good enough? Are you talented enough? Are you smart enough? There's a God in heaven who is insanely in love with you. He wants you to jump back inside of that batter's box and take a swing with everything you've got. There's some of us in your marriage, you need to start going after it in a better way and prove it. There's some of us that have dreams that are dying. We need to bring them back to life and rekindle those things. There's some of us that we have all these ideas of the someday, and the someday never shows up. Today's your day. It's what it was for Peter. When Jesus turned the tables on him and said, you come follow me. He says the same thing to you today. Come follow me. Come live out your dreams here. Come improve. Come get better. Come change your finances. You step in that batter's box right now and you take a swing with everything you've got. And I promise you, with God's help, you'll hit it. Let me pray with you. God, I pray that you would help each of us, Lord, to learn better, to take a swing for our life, God. God, there are some of us in this place, God, that our marriages are falling apart, God. I pray that we would do better, God. We would work harder. God, there's some of us that, Lord, we accept so much less in our finances than they really could be because we just think this is the best it'll ever be. God, some of us, in our dreams, God, we've let them turn into routines and they have faded away and our dreams have become a distant memory. And I pray today that you would change us. And God, that you would revolutionize our life. Would you say this prayer out loud after me? We can all say it together. That way you don't feel pointed out. But let's just say it after me. Say, Jesus. Jesus. Come on, I'll say it like you mean it. Say it with some unction. Jesus, today, I want to let you know that I'm willing to get in the batter's box and take a swing. You've made me for greatness. You've caused me to dream big. Now help me today to go after it with all I've got. Fear is gone. Doubt is gone. Outside voices are shut down. I hear only what you say to me. I'm a child of God. I was created in His image. And I was created for greatness. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you so much for letting me be with you guys today. It's so been an honor to hear you.